Welcome to The Doctor Is Out, a podcast hosted by Dr. Sharif Akili, resident physician at Stanford Hospital and investor at Polaris Partners. Join Sharif in exploring the extraclinical practice of medicine as he interviews healthcare leaders who have gone from bedside to build companies, run health systems, spearhead public policy, and pursue many other paths where they lend their unique bedside perspectives.
Our guest today is the VP of Health at Apple and a clinical professor at Stanford, Dr. Sumbul Desai. We have a really special guest today. She's a giant in digital health and has spearheaded and overseen so many digital health innovations that have changed how we practice medicine. She is both the VP of Health at Apple and a clinical professor at Stanford. And she is currently spearheading Apple's growing entrance into health and wellness with ongoing collaborations with leading institutions around Apple Health, the Apple Watch, and so much more. Dr. Sumbul Desai, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today.
Thank you so much. And thanks for the kind introduction. You make me sound so important, and I don't even think of myself that way. So thank you.
You're much too humble. You're much too humble. I have got so many questions. I'm quite excited, actually, to have this interview because your background is so cool. Before we get into the incredible things you're currently doing at Apple, I want to ask actually a bit about your background before medicine, because you had a very unique career in journalism at ABC News and strategy at Disney already before even applying to med school and heading down that path. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, I definitely took a different path to my journey in medicine, and I'm glad I did. My parents always tease me. I gave them a ton of heartache as a teenager, but it all turned out okay. So, for every Indian parent out there, it does all work out in the end. But I started my career. Actually, funny story. I started my journey into academics in college as an admit into one of the six-year BSMD programs at Rensselaer. Huh. And I hated it. I was miserable. I did not want to go to medical school just because my parents had told me to do so, which was the case. So my dad really wanted me to be a doctor. And I was somewhat rebellious growing up. And if my parents told me to do something, I didn't want to do it just because they told me to do it. And so I did end up going to RPI in the six-year BSMD program, but my first semester, I just came home during that winter and I was just miserable. And my dad, I think, finally just threw up his hands in the air and just was like, do whatever you want. And so I changed majors and stayed at RPI, but went to change my undergrad major to computer science and minored in communications. And for my minor in communications, an internship was part of it. And I actually interned at WCVB, which is an Albany affiliate up in the upstate New York area, and worked in the newsroom. And that led to an internship at ABC News. So I interned on the weekends at Good Morning America Sunday. So I would drive down on the weekends and do that.
So cool.
And yeah, it was totally different. It was fun. It was really fun. As a college student, it was like so cool. And then it was funny because I interned with people like Robin Roberts, who's now on Good Morning America as their co-host. Like I knew her from back in the day. So it's so neat to see people I worked with. When I was applying for jobs after graduation from, like right prior to graduation from my bachelor's, I had my job applications to the IBMs of the world. And then I had my job applications to ABC News. And I got accepted to a job offer at ABC News as a desk assistant. And the way that works is you kind of work your way up the ranks and worked on the overnight, which feeds Good Morning America. Then I worked my way up and I got to work on World News Tonight and did the DA work as well as researching work. So it was kind of fun. Wow. But it was funny because I had also gotten a job at IBM. So for a period of time, I was working at IBM during the day and ABC News at night. And then when I finally switched to the daytime, I ended up moving over to ABC News. And it was really funny. I did the IBM thing because I needed to keep my parents happy that I would have a secure income because they didn't quite understand this news and media thing. And I loved working at ABC News. It was a ton of fun. I learned a ton. I worked at ABC News for I have to, like, a few years. And then what happened was, while I loved Muse, I think what I was really looking for is, why do you make the decisions you make to make the decisions of what gets to be on TV Muse, you know, during the broadcast? And a lot of that was business drivers. And so I started, you know, getting antsy to understand the why behind why we make certain decisions, which is, I think, something that's really important to me. For me, it's really important to understand, like, why are we doing things? How do we build things? And I ended up moving out to, so the Walt Disney Company owned ABC News, sorry. And I ended up moving out to California to work on the business side, moved into the movie studio business, where I learned on the business side, you know, why the company makes the decisions they do, and was really focused on helping grow some of, and I was pretty junior back then. So, like, really learning how, you know, the company makes decisions on growing various aspects of their TV business, of their DVD business. Back in the day, DVDs were a thing, production deals for the movie studios. So did that, and did that for about 4 years. And then in 2001, I was still working at Disney. I went home to visit my parents, and my mom, it was August of 2001. My mom, while I was visiting, had a massive stroke.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, I'm not a physician. I wasn't a physician at that time. Right. So she woke up, and it's so funny because now, as a physician, and I'm sure for all of your audience that is physicians, they totally would know what was happening, but she had woken up with the worst headache of her life, didn't want to wake me up, so went downstairs, came back upstairs, really looked off, and had a massive brain bleed. So she had a cavernous malformation that bled.
Oh my gosh.
And went into a coma right in front of me. And it's so funny because, as it's not really funny, but as a physician now, I can look back and look at how amazing it is that my mother survived that incident. But my mom went straight into a coma, didn't have a protected airway, which I now know as a physician, but did not know then. You know, had an aspiration event when she got to the emergency room, was intubated, and was comatose for a number of weeks. And, you know, when you think of comas, you know, in media, it's always like, oh, they went into a coma and they wake right up. But it was a very long process, and had a massive brain bleed. And I took care of her. I took leave from work and took care of her. And it was a month before September 11th. So what happened was, they had cleared the ICUs and the higher acuity care in the hope on September 11th, in the hope to accept patients. But as you know, things unfortunately didn't work out that way. But people like my mom, who were in the ICU, actually moved to rehab facilities much earlier than they were ready to. And so my mom was pretty critically ill when she went to the rehab facility. And I ended up taking care of her and doing a lot more nursing along with taking care of her. And that's how I got to know the medical staff there. And that's, I think, when I really fell in love with medicine. Yeah. You know, when medicine comes together and it works really well with, like, the rehab, like the, you know, the neurologist and the occupational therapist and the physical therapist and the respiratory therapist, because she was still traped and pegged at that time. It can be like almost like an orchestra coming together. And it was amazing to see my mom through that progression of, at one point, you know, on a trach, we ended up being able to decannulate her, you know, had a peg, she was able to go home eating. So she went through on that whole journey. And obviously the mom I knew that I grew up with is pretty different than what she is today and what she was then, because she did, you know, obviously as a result suffer some issues with her cognition, but overall we're very blessed to have her. But that was a really life-changing moment for me. So when I went back to the Walt Disney Company, it just wasn't the same. I wanted something where I could really have impact on a person's life. And I'll never forget the role that the ICU physicians and the physicians played for me when I didn't know what was happening with my mom. And my mom was my best friend. So for me, it was an amazing loss in that sense. And to be able to give that back to another human being is what I really aspired to be. So truth be told, when I went through residency, I always wanted to be a critical care physician. And so I never thought I'd be doing what I do today, but I went through that experience and went back to Disney, I just felt like something was missing and I wanted to give back. So I went back and did my post-bac, applied to medical school, never thinking I was going to get in. My husband, I have some, you know, these just key pivotal moments in your life. That was obviously one of them. Another was when I had applied to medical school. I was like, oh, should I, you know, I had gotten into medical school. I'd only applied to the East Coast programs. I didn't apply to any California programs because I was going to wait till the next cycle because I was applying really late and I didn't think I was going to get in. And I got into a medical school in Virginia. And this is one of the key pivotal moments in my life. I asked my husband, I'm like, so you think I should go or should I wait and apply to med school next year and try to go to a Cali school? And he was like, you're not getting any younger, so you might as well go now. So I decided to go to medical school in Virginia and then applied to residency at Stanford because my husband was out here. He went to business school at Stanford. So I applied back out here, was lucky enough to get into Stanford. And there began my medical career, which I, you know, Stanford obviously plays a really special role in my heart in terms of my career. And and here I am. So
wow, that is an inspiring story. Thank you for sharing that. I think there's probably, you'd be hard to find somebody else who has had such a journey. And you know, reflecting back too, I feel like I actually just got a call from a listener who had reached out to me by email. Was like a second year BA MD student at a New Jersey program. And what I sort of recognized reflecting back is like sometimes those programs can be traps because it's so hard to decide what you want to do for the rest of your life at age 17.
Totally.
And
I
they
agree.
Get such talented totally. People who can get one of those coveted slots who would be able to get into medical school probably or whatever they'd like to do, but it can be so attractive sometimes when you're that young.
It's so true. I actually give that guidance to a lot of, a lot of kids who feel the pressure to apply. I'm like, you're going to get into medical school later in life. Don't worry about it if that's what you want to do. But, you know, medicine is such a grueling path. If you think about what we go through in med school and then residency, you have to really love it. And I'm sure you know, see this in residency too. Like the people who do really well are the ones who like love it. It's a passion. And the ones who are doing it because that was just the right thing to do, it comes through in their training. And so it's so important to like really love what you're doing. And for me, like in medical school, like I loved going back to medical school later in life. I got such a kick out of studying as an older student. I was one of the older students when I went back to med school. And it was such an amazing time. Like I still have my med school notes. Like I had such a great time going back to med school because it was such a special time. And I think it's really important to make sure you love what you're doing, especially in this field.
Couldn't agree more. You know, it's very interesting. So you were at residency at Stanford, same place I'm at right now. But right afterwards, you were the medical director of strategic initiatives in the CMO office at Stanford. And then you were the associate chief medical officer of strategy and innovation at Stanford. Mm-hmm. How did you get involved in those roles when you came to Stanford for residency? Did you approach residency in any particular way or did you work on any notable projects?
It's a really good question. So I, no, actually I didn't go through residency at all thinking that this was where I was going to land doing those roles. What ended up happening was again, like when I went through residency and I still joke about this, like I actually, really thought I was going to do critical care and was really excited about it. I was older and I was getting ready to have a family and I made the trade-off to not do further fellowship training because I wanted to focus on having kids and being a mom is one of the most important things to me. And so I was really lucky to, I'm glad I made that decision. It was the right decision for me. And what happened was up until my third year, again, always thought I was going to do fellowships and never even thought I was going to do anything different. And then I started looking at, thinking back in my last year of residency, like what are the areas I really enjoy? And I had love inpatient medicine. So being a hospitalist was very, very, seemed very obvious to me. So that was something that I was really, you know, if I wasn't going to do critical care, I wanted to do inpatient medicine. But I also, during my last year of residency, started to pay attention a little bit more to like our technology infrastructure. Like I was one of the first few residents that actually, like our year was one of the first years that Epic was actually in place,
oh, wow.
You know, at the hospital. Yeah, so it was kind of an interesting time. And but just looking at the technology infrastructure, the inefficiencies kind of in how care is delivered. And so I decided to have an informational interview with this chief medical officer at the time, who's Kevin Tabb, who's now at Beth Israel Deaconess. And just as like a note to listeners, especially to students, like the informational interview is such a great tool, especially when you're training or in as a student, because what you find is people really do want to share their journey with you. And if somebody can learn from some of the mistakes they've had, I think people are very open to doing that. And so I had that interview. And during that conversation, I never expected it to land where it was. He had actually worked at GE. So he had a little bit of an understanding of what Disney was like, because GE and Disney had a lot of similarities mm-hmm. in terms of the way they operated. And he was like, hey, when you finish residency, why don't you do 50% clinical and 50% work for me? And that's how it came about. It was very serendipitous. I never expected it. He offered it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I never thought about that. And he appreciated that I had a business background, that I could bring that to some of the work going on in the CMO's office. And then during my first few months of the job, he actually left to go become CEO. And so I had a new CEO that was starting. Oh. And I was like, oh God, now what do I do? So I continued with the role and then built my own. I really do feel like, you know, one thing about Stanford is it's great. There's a ton of opportunity to explore new things, but really like thought about what does Stanford need, and technology and healthcare was just becoming a conversation. So I built a lot of the, you know, the groups and the infrastructure that now exists.
Like Clickwell, right? So, which is I think the first virtual primary care clinic.
Primary care clinic. And even before that, I had built the strategy and innovation team. There was never a digital health team. So I started that on the hospital side, and employer clinics. We never did employer clinics. When I came there, I had joined and built our employer clinics. DreamWorks was one of the first ones that we had talked with, and Qualcomm. So like that kind of work that we had done. And even primary care, like getting involved with primary care. So there's all these new areas that I had dug into. Like before I was there, primary care is such a big entity now. It wasn't always like that. And so
it almost seems like obvious now.
Some of that. Yeah. And help build some of that. So as you can tell, like I love building things. And so that was, I was really lucky to be at the right place at the right time. And that led to the associate chief medical officer job. And so I worked on the hospital side as well as the school side. And then eventually transitioned a little bit more over to the school side and worked on the Center for Digital Health and Clickwell, and built that Clickwell clinic mm-hmm. up, which is something really cool to see that people still remember, because it was one of our first primary virtual care clinics.
Absolutely.
Also helped with getting telemedicine up. So the fact that we have telemedicine being used so much by Stanford, I was really involved with that early on when it started. So it's kind of cool to see some of those things happen.
You can see the footprints as we've been doing so much telemedicine during the pandemic. I think we wouldn't have been as well positioned if it wasn't for that.
Yeah. So it's cool. So I was like involved with a lot of those things early on, and it was, it was an interesting, and I didn't appreciate. So to answer your question, mm-hmm. did I approach residency in a special way? I didn't really, but I always let my passion kind of drive where I ended up. And I think that's really important too. I think a lot of times, especially all of us type A personalities, think we have to have this path mapped out. And a lot of times, if you are just working hard and excited about what you're doing and, you know, be willing to kind of shape your own path, you can kind of drive things forward as opposed to feeling like, oh, I have to do this by this age and this by this age. And I think that's been a real gift to be able to be open-minded like that.
That's really cool. You know, it's interesting. A lot of guests on this podcast have an MBA or some secondary degree. I almost feel like I'm a spokesperson for the MBA with all my MBA guests, but you don't. Do you think those degrees are necessary for those looking to pivot in this way?
It's a really good question. So I'm married to an MBA. I'm married to a GSBer, a Stanford GSBer. And I had thought about, you know, whether I needed to do the MBA. And I'll tell you why I thought about it. The reason I thought about it is, I always laugh. MDs are the only people that list their degrees. It's just a thing amongst MDs, but no other profession does that. And I always notice the MD MBA, and I'm like, maybe I won't be able to do anything in business if I don't have an MBA. But the reason I decided not to is I had real world experience in business for a number of years. And when I was having the conversation with my husband on whether I should go back to do an MBA or not, he was like, I'm not sure it's going to buy you anything in terms of, you know, credibility or understanding business skills. And so I think you're fine without it. And, you know, I was older also. So I really was like a very serious decision for me, like, should I do it or should I not? And I really don't think it held me back, because I think if you have industry experience, I think that translates to be able to deliver all the skills that you need on the business side of healthcare. If you're someone who's never worked and, you know, you're coming kind of straight out of college, then it totally makes sense. And I think that there's a whole different skill set. The way you think about problems is different as an MBA. So I do think it's valuable in those scenarios. So I think you have to look at where you are and what you want to do. in my particular case, I was lucky. I felt like I had good, you know, real world corporate experience that's been helpful. And so didn't feel the need to have the MBA.
I appreciate that. It's great having that perspective too, because I think it's, you know, there isn't a straight path here. So I don't want people to get the sense that they have to get an MBA.
No, you don't. I think you can. And actually, I counsel a lot of med students, and depending on where they are in their life, I think you have to look at what's going to be most high impact for you. I think doing something for the sake of doing it, just to check the box, is never the right reason to do it. And so I think that's really critical.
Yeah. Pivoting a little bit. So after your work at Stanford, how did you find yourself at Apple?
It's a good question. So Clickwell actually got noticed by some folks at Apple, in terms of, you know, the work that we were doing in digital health. And I got to know some of the folks through that. I started consulting for Apple a little bit on the side. And that's one of the great things about being a faculty member. You get to do other things. And as that evolved, I got to know some of the leadership team here, and ended up, you know, being offered a job and taking a job here. It was a really hard decision. I like loved what I was doing at Stanford. So it was not a simple decision to make the move, but obviously I'm glad I had. But it was as simple as just, you know, coming across some people and getting to know them better and seeing where things kind of evolved.
That's so cool. So what does your day-to-day look like at Apple? How did you even think about what you'd end up doing there, and how did that expectation match reality?
Yeah, what I ended up thinking I was going to do is pretty different than what I ended up doing. Okay. So it is definitely evolved. And it's partially because, you know, as we grow our work in health, your role evolves with it, right? So you have to be really open to being flexible and, being okay with some ambiguity sometimes, and not sometimes, all the time. And, you know, kind of figuring out how to chart your path. I think one of the things I love that we do is we build things. And as you can see from my background, like I love building things. So that's great. My days are filled with a variety of things depending on the day. I do oversee a team. So a lot of it is, you know, team building, and initially it was building the team and recruiting the team. Now it's much more like developing the team and continuing to, you know, work on how do we make ourselves be a completely high functioning, amazing team. A lot of times the day will involve things like working on products and sitting in design meetings and sitting with engineers and going through data to make sure that the feasibility of some of the things that we're looking at makes sense. Does it clinically click, scientifically click? What's the research and data we need to be able to make sure that the product or feature we're discussing is a reality? You know, I work a lot with the design team. That's some of my favorite meetings where I get to sit down and think about like, what's the user going to get out of this experience? And those are always really fun. Yeah, I mean, it's a variety of things. Every day is different. And with COVID, obviously, we've all taken on different roles. Yeah. So with COVID, we're doing a lot more. But I'm also responsible for our on-site clinic in SCV, so sometimes in Santa Clara Valley. So sometimes,
well, go figure.
You know, it's things like understanding, you know, how things are going in the clinic or what innovative program we're doing there. So it's a variety of things. It's a pretty wide array of work.
Are there any projects that are collaborative between Apple and Stanford in that way?
We had obviously the Apple Heart Study was one of the most collaborative ones, and we still collaborate on that regularly. And so that was probably one of the biggest collaborations we had. And Stanford Medicine is such a great partner, so we've worked on a few since there. You know, I was with Bob Harrington. I'm always talking about ways that we can collaborate. I think there's some newer research areas that we look into sometimes with Stanford faculty. So we're always doing that. And then I have my role as like you know, obviously it's not a big part of my time as much anymore, but I have my role as a faculty member. I'm not practicing right now, but what I've been doing was, you know, helping with some of the committees that exist at the School of Medicine to help on some initiatives and give some input there. And I love staying in touch with this, with Stanford. It's always been, it's such a great source of constantly, you know, new education and challenges.
That's so cool. That's so cool. I mean, personally, I'd love to be able to keep, you know, one foot in academia and be able to be interfacing with students. Was Stanford open to that? Did it happen organically? Was it more of a sell to Apple or to Stanford or?
It's a good question, actually. I initially was practicing, so it was obviously a little bit easier on Stanford side. It was a sell to both sides, mm-hmm. to be honest. I mean, I think, you know, it was walking away from a lot of responsibility from Stanford and now transitioning. And then it was also making Stanford feel Apple feel comfortable that I could take the time. I have to say we have some really amazing leadership at Stanford. I mean, Dean Miner has been really supportive. Bob Harrington has been really supportive. The CEOs of the hospital have always been really supportive of the connection. So, I mean, I've been really lucky in the sense that we have a number of great people who are very, very supportive of the work and the relationship and being able to stay connected.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Out of curiosity, for the work you do right now, were there any experiences that you think prepared you the most? Whether it was your experience before medicine, during residency, the projects you worked on, with Stanford before you were at Apple?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think in terms of like the work that I do, I definitely think working at in media and in the entertainment business has helped in that you always had an eye on what consumers are interested in or want. And something that Disney did really well is obviously thinking about, you know, how do you bring an amazing, delightful experience to their customers? And I feel like being able to understand that and bring that same skill, or at least build on that, because I was very junior back then, obviously. But I think like that the eye to pay attention to some of those conversations was really important, and is really important in the work we do here at Apple. I also think being curious, which you learn during residency, you know, interestingly, one of the other skills that's really valuable is having good clinical gut.
Yeah.
And what, you know what I mean? Like that ability, like sick, not suck, sick. Yeah, like even though I'm not practicing regularly, like just being able to ask the right questions sometimes and just having that clinical sense, which you really hone during residency and at Stanford, I think is also a really valuable skill actually, because when you hear about things and technology being used certain ways, you're like, oh, I don't know if that makes sense. You know, right. To be able to rely on that clinical gestalt, I think is really important. The other one is understanding the science and physiology behind the work and behind clinical decisions is really helpful in the work we do. And understanding how technology is received by healthcare systems and patients is really valuable, which came from my days at Stanford. And I think there's a lot of value in understanding that here at Apple. So, you know, it's funny. I will say that I think every one of my experiences in my life is like built up to being valuable in the work I do today. Everything, I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason. And I feel like my path has really contributed. I'm still growing and I'm still learning. Like I'm nowhere near where I want to be in terms of all the skills I'd like to have. But I think all of it kind of builds. And I think it's really important to make sure that every step of your journey, you kind of internalize and process it, because it's going to be valuable to you in the next thing you do. And I think I can see that a lot of times. My skills from Disney of doing amazing slides is really helpful still. Like I'm a big, you know, we're a big slide culture, and that's come incredibly valuable. So like, it's everything, you know, like a lot of times with slides, people will be like, especially physicians sometimes will be like, you know, I don't understand, like slides don't feel like that's important, but that's how you tell a story. And every little step you take in life is really valuable, and everything kind of contributes in one way. So to me, I feel like all of those experiences have been really valuable.
That's really insightful. You know, I feel like there are a lot of medical students and residents who sort of have this interest in digital health and these bigger experiences. Would you have any advice for them on like how to break into that field or explore that field, or, you know, obviously we hear these big giants in health tech or just tech like Apple and Google entering healthcare, and you think there's a lot of opportunities there to build and innovate. But as a physician or somebody from a medical background, would you have any advice on how one could dip their toe or explore that space?
Yeah, I think there's, so I'll answer the question in two ways. I think there's one, how do you dip your toe? And then there's two, how are you successful at it, right? So dipping your toe, I think, the one thing that I think would be great for more residency programs to do is really enable more opportunities to get internships or engagements, right? So I think being offered, and this will tie to how to be successful, is the ability to give of your time so that, you know, you may be offering, because you're a physician, some of your skill set to be really valuable and be willing to give your time without expecting anything back. Like, I used to be a big believer in internship and let me just spend time with you. That's really valuable for you because you'll decide if this is something you're interested or not in, right? And you'll also probably learn what's kind of top of mind of a lot of digital health folks or technology folks. So during residency, during med school, if it's an area you're interested in, like, take some time, like during an easier rotation, to, you know, just even offer your time to be like, hey, can I just shadow you? Or, you know, is there any projects that I can help you on? Because people always are willing to engage with folks in one way or another. So I think that's really helpful. And ask a lot of questions, do the informational interview. I think those are really valuable. So I do think taking the time to do that. But then in terms of how to be successful, I think it's really important to, be willing to roll up your sleeves and not expect much. Cause I think sometimes, you know, you go into these big companies and you think it's a lot more glamorous. And I think you have to be like, the people that are successful are the ones that are willing to roll up their sleeves and do some of the like work that's not always so glamorous. Like, I still do slide work. And actually for me, it's some of the most fun things that I do. You know, it's like getting a chance to be willing to, don't come in with the impression that I'm a physician, so I only should be getting my input. Be willing to actually do some of the work and roll up your sleeves and do the research and, you know, write spreadsheets or do write papers or do decks or, you know, whatever you need to do to be helpful so that you can learn. And that's how you're going to get to be successful in those roles too. I think it's really important. I've sometimes met some folks who like want to come in and just be giving input, and everybody just ultimately, at least especially in cultures like Apple, you have to roll up your sleeves and be willing to do the work. And that's really important.
Yeah. Something, another guest had said, nothing is below you.
Exactly. That's totally right. Nothing is below you, and be open to that and just embrace it.
I love it. That's really great advice. So for my last question, it's a segment that we started just recently called Picks, where we have our guests recommend something they enjoyed recently. It can be absolutely anything, a book, an article, a TV show, song, movie, another podcast. Is there anything you came across recently that you found interesting that you'd like to recommend?
I will say that I have started reading, and by the way, my daughter just joined the podcast, so you might have an additional voice in the background. So.
That's great, I love it.
So
honorary guest.
I have started doing, in terms of picks, I just, in the pandemic, one of my things was to start reading fiction. I always used to read nonfiction. So I'll give you one really good nonfiction book, audiobook that I'm listening to that I love, which is How to Lead, by David Rubenstein. It's the audiobook is phenomenal because it's interviews with a number of leaders across a number of industries. And I think there's just really amazing things you hear about everybody's story, that what made them what they are. And so it's one of the best audiobooks I've listened to. But I made it a goal of mine to read read more fiction during the pandemic. So I'll give you two picks there.
Please do. Yeah.
The Henna Artist is absolutely fabulous. I really like that book. And then Take It Back is another one that I read recently that was just a page turner, and really great books in fiction that have just come out recently.
What's the genre?
And so those are my two picks. So they're one's more of a, you know, historic, I would say not love story, but like coming of age for a woman. And then another one is much more of a suspense thriller, and it's just great. Both of them are great books, and I like kind of read through them through really quick sittings. So those are my
Could you say the first name of the first book? I don't think it fully came across.
Henna artist.
Okay.
And then take it back.
Amazing. Yep. Amazing.
Yeah.
Where Sumble, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. This was so much fun.
Of course. This was so fun. You're so fabulous doing these interviews. Like, you're really great. And you can tell that you're passionate in doing this. So congratulations.
That does it for this episode of The Doctor Is Out. Thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support us, please leave a review on Apple Podcast or whichever podcast platform you use. And if there's something you found you really liked or didn't like or would like to make a suggestion, feel free to reach out by email at info@tdio.org.